The Whiting Family's Conversion and Migration by Diana Fife Rice. Introduction. Elisha Whiting Sr. was born 21 November 1762 at Hartford, Connecticut. He served in the Revolutionary War during his teenage years. He married Susanna Butler and they had three children. Elisha became a sea captain, who died leaving his wife to raise three young children. His only son, Elisha Whiting Jr., was bound out to a cruel Quaker to learn the carpentry trade. Even though Elisha worked very hard, the carpenter was so harsh that Elisha ran away to Massachusetts to work for a wheelwright. Elisha fell in love and married his new employer's oldest daughter, Sally Hewlett, a beautiful 17-year-old who was a part Indian and a poet. The couple moved to Nelson, Ohio in 1817, where the last six of their 12 children were born. Sally and Elisha Whiting Jr. were some of the most respected citizens of Nelson. They were honest, generous, and firm in their convictions. Our progenitor Edwin, the subject of this story, was their third child. Sometime during the year 1830, one of Edwin Whiting's uncles, Sylvester Hewlett, traveled on business from the township of Nelson to Kirtland, Ohio. He met Oliver Cowdery and other missionaries. He was baptized in March, a month before the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints was organized. He returned to Nelson with a copy of the Book of Mormon. Nelson was a closely related community which included the Whitings, the Coxes, and the Hewletts. In May of 1830, the Prophet Joseph Smith and Parley P. Pratt visited the Nelson area. Edwin's mother, Sally, was converted and baptized on October 29, 1830. Edwin's father, Elisha, barely tolerant, was not yet convinced. On September 12, 1831, Joseph Smith moved from Kirtland to a home within 5 miles from Nelson, giving the family many more opportunities to come in contact with the prophet. Several more family members were baptized, including Sally's widowed mother Mary Lewis Hewlett and three of Sally's siblings. Edwin married Elizabeth Partridge Tillotson September 21, 1833. Three children were born to them while they lived in Ohio. Due to persecution, the extended family gradually moved to Far West, Missouri. Edwin and Elizabeth moved there in 1838. Elizabeth and Edwin, some of his brothers and sisters, and his father Elisha were baptized in August of 1838 by Thomas B. Marsh. Having stubbornly resisted baptism, Elisha had fallen very ill. His wife had offered to call the elders. He had refused to have them come. When he was near death, he reconsidered, and was quickly healed after the blessing. He then decided to join the church. Far West Damages. As saints gathered into Far West for safety, Governor Boggs issued his extermination order. The saints were driven out with few provisions in the dead of winter. Joseph Smith asked the suffering families to itemize their losses so that the detailed evidence could be presented to the world and heads of governments. Edwin and his father both compiled lists of their losses. Their combined losses totaled over $8,000. The damages were more than monetary, Edwin's father explained. After Elisha bought and fenced and improved 80 acres, he was then mobbed and driven from that, having to leave farming equipment, a quantity of stored crops, along with furniture and household possessions behind. There was loss of health, being driven from our home, being exposed to storms of every description, and lying in the open air for 6 or 7 weeks, and lying in beds drenched with rain and snow, damage inestimable. Yelrome. The Whiting, Cox, and Hewlett families were sent to settle near Lima, Illinois, about 25 miles south of Nauvoo. The new little settlement became known as Yelrome. By 1840 there was a Lima stake, and the Yelrome branch had grown from 16 to 424 members. Edwin became a counselor to the branch president, Isaac Morley. He also was appointed colonel in the Nauvoo Legion. The principle of plural marriage was introduced to the residents of Yelrom during a conference held in September of 1842. Brigham Young was presiding over the meeting. At this conference, members of the branch also pledged 1/10 of all of their time and means to build the Nauvoo Temple. One of the beams for the temple was later produced in the Whiting Chair Shop. On April 22, 1844, Apostles Brigham Young and Wilford Woodruff spoke at conference in the Lima Stake and asked for volunteers to serve missions. Edwin Whiting and Walter Cox were two of the volunteers. Edwin went to Pennsylvania, and Walter was called to New England. Of future significance to Edwin, Walter stopped to visit the part of the Cox family that still lived in Ohio. One of his sisters, Mary Elizabeth, was converted. She eventually moved to Lima and was baptized in March of 1845 in the Mississippi River by Isaac Morley. Persecution. Trouble was brewing in the Lima and Yelrom areas. In one instance, vigilantes issued impossible demands upon local members of the church. 12 days later, Joseph Smith and his brother Hiram were murdered. The grieving saints were counseled not to seek revenge, and relative peace was established. Edwin was still serving in the mission field at that time. He soon returned home and took up arms with his brothers to protect his family and property. During the Battle of Crooked River, 4 of his brothers and 1 sister decided Brigham Young should not be the leader of the church. They followed a Mr. Cutler, called themselves Cutlerites, and moved to Minnesota. They have kept in contact with the rest of the family. In January of 1845, Edwin married his second wife, a widow by the name of Almira Mitchell Mitchum, who had 1 surviving son. Anti-Mormon conflicts continued to build. During one vigilante meeting, sniper shots were fired and the Mormons were blamed. The angry mob decided to expel the Mormons. September 11, 1845, a vigilante group gathered. Mobbers set fire to several homes and businesses, including Father Whiting's chair shop. Elizabeth Whiting sat in the rain on a pile of wet bedding, holding young Emily Jane in her arms, as they watched their home burn. At least 29 homes were destroyed in the settlement on this terrible day. Rescuers helped the members of the Yelrom settlement relocate, moving the sick and the women and children along with goods and grain to Nauvoo. Edwin and his family eventually rented a home they shared with the Isaac Morley family. Elizabeth gave birth to a son, Edwin Lucius, on October 22, 1845. Brigham Young asked the men to return to Yelrom to monitor the mob and to sell their property or trade for supplies. As persecution continued, the saints prepared to evacuate Illinois, and efforts turned towards outfitting wagons and preparing the supplies. Edwin and his brothers returned to their former home and finished the chairs they had been making before hostilities broke out. On their way, they passed the farm of a man who owed money for chairs previously purchased. In the fields they saw a flock of their own sheep. They made no attempt to recover their sheep or money. Instead, they focused their efforts on finishing chairs and gathering the corn from their farms by dark of night. Eventually, they sold the completed chairs in Quincy, Illinois, and used the proceeds to help them purchase supplies for their trip west. Edmund Durfee was among their neighbors, who had also been harvesting their crops in the dark. At about midnight, shots were fired. Edmund was shot through the heart and died instantly. Preparations and travel. In Nauvoo, the first priority was to finish the temple. It had to be completed and guarded around the clock. At the same time, wagon shops to outfit the saints for the trek were established all over the city, and the wagons were built with hand-cut timber. Blacksmiths worked day and night. The Whitings and Coxes, experienced woodworkers and wheelwrights, were responsible for a heavy share of the work. The temple was dedicated and endowment sessions began on December 10, 1845. Knowing they were facing a trek westward, preparations were steadily made, and temple work was quickly performed for as many as possible. On Tuesday, January 7, Edwin, his second wife Almira, and Mary Elizabeth Cox received their endowments. Elizabeth, Edwin's first wife, received her endowments on January 27. Afterwards, she knelt across the altar and was sealed to her husband. Edwin was next sealed to Almira. Then he was married and sealed to his third wife, Mary Elizabeth Cox. The following day, Almira bore Edwin another son, named Edward Lucian. Edwin's parents, Elisha and Sally, were endowed on the 3rd of February. Soon the preparations to leave were intensified. 25 groups known as emigrating companies were organized for the trip. Isaac Morley was president over Company No. 4, the company in which most of the Whiting family traveled. The first of the Saints crossed the ice on the Mississippi River at Nauvoo, then gathered at Sugar Creek, Illinois, and waited for Brigham Young. Sometime in late February or early March, the Cox and Whiting families left Nauvoo. By then, the river was no longer frozen, so they were able to cross in flatboats. Elizabeth and Almira, both caring for newborns, remained behind. Edwin returned for them later. Not enough wagons were available to transport all, so the able-bodied were expected to walk, reserving wagon space for the aged, the ill, and small children. The record is one of terrible privation, sickness, and death. Because of heavy rains, it took months to travel stretches that should have taken days. It took an entire month for each of the emigrating companies to assemble in Sugar Creek. It took 131 days to cover the next part of the journey, 300 miles across Iowa. By contrast, it took the Pioneer Company, as the first group that traveled to Salt Lake with Brigham Young was called, only 111 days to travel 1,050 miles to the Salt Lake Valley the following year. Inadequate preparation, lack of knowledgeable guides, delays, miserable weather, and difficult terrain made the Iowa journey one of the most trying in church history. The companies were reorganized into larger groups of 100, and plans to reach the Rocky Mountains that season were changed. Way stations along the route were established. Mount Pisgah. The Whiting family was sent to Mount Pisgah, the largest way station. Edwin and Mary Elizabeth arrived in May of 1846. Isaac Morley was branch president, and Edwin Whiting and Walter Cox were his counselors. The family prepared for their trek by planting crops. In late May, Edwin returned for Elizabeth and Almira. Walter Cox built her chair shop, and built the desks and chairs for a school in the Grove. Mary Elizabeth Cox Whiting was the teacher. All of the many months of struggle had weakened the Saints' health. In an outbreak of cholera, there were so many sick in the family at the same time, that no one was well enough to care for the ill ones. Sally Hewlett Whiting, Edwin's mother, and his daughter Emily Jane died. Two of his nieces, Eliza and Louisa Cox, also died. Even in these trying times, their faith remained strong. Edwin continued to manufacture chairs, and took them by wagon to Missouri and sold them. Returning home from one trip with his brother and brother-in-law, they were hit by terrible weather, a blizzard, hurricane and cyclone all in one. They were lost and were forced to make camp and build a fire to survive. They only had 3 matches and the first 2 failed to light. After filling a bucket with damp tinder, they used a second bucket as a cover and successfully struck the final match. When the storm was over, Edwin's brother-in-law Orville went looking for a road, and found that they were only a half mile from their own field fence, and were soon home, but badly frozen. In 1847, after the Pioneer Company left, Lorenzo Snow became president of the branch at Mount Pisgah, and Edwin became one of his counselors. Edwin's father Elisha remarried, and both he and his new wife died of cholera. The next year, when President Snow began his journey west, Edwin became president of the now dwindling Mount Pisgah branch. While in far west, 3 sons were born, Mary's son Albert and Elizabeth's sons Lucius and Oscar. The trek west. Finally, in 1849, Edwin, his three wives, and a total of 9 children began their trek to the Rocky Mountains. Edwin's family consisted of Edwin Whiting, age 39, Elizabeth Partridge Tillotson Whiting, age 35, William Whiting, age 14, Helen Amelia Whiting, age 12, Edwin Lucius Whiting, age 3, Oscar Newell Whiting, age 18 months, Almira M.M. Palmer Whiting, age 25, Almond Babbitt Palmer, about 9 years, Edward Lucian Whiting, age 3, Ellen Emerit Whiting, age 18 months, Cornelia Emmeline Whiting, age 3 months, Mary Elizabeth Cox Whiting, age 22, Albert Milton Whiting, age 18 months. Mary drove one of the teams and the oldest daughter of the family, Helen Amelia, rode with Mary to help her with her toddler. Ezra T. Benson was in command of the combined company of 100 wagons the family joined. They were assigned to the Isaac Morley section consisting of 50 wagons. George A. Smith was in charge of the other 50 wagons. The two groups traveled one behind the other, easing density problems, while still ensuring safety from Indians. Stampede. One day while camped, they saw a herd of buffalo stampeding towards them. Edwin grabbed his long black whip and managed to part the herd just enough to save the encampment. Mary wrote it was after about 3 weeks of travel at 1 o'clock at night, and being in the many herds of buffalo was most terrifying. Father was on guard but no one was hurt, so we were comforted although 8 or 10 head of our cattle were lost. Volumes might be written of that long and tedious journey. We saw many herds of buffalo, but our worst and most trying experience was on the Sweetwater. After reaching the Black Hills, we were snowed in for about 3 days and many of the best cattle in the company died. Father counted 9 head in one little bunch of willows. Emergency provisions were sent to them by Brigham Young. Arrival and assignment. On October 28, 1849, the Whiting family arrived in the Salt Lake Valley. Mary Cox Whiting wrote, "I have never beheld a sight so good and so beautiful as Salt Lake City. It was one of the prettiest places I ever saw. We were so thankful our journey was at an end." Their rest was short. In a few days the Edwin Whitings, Morleys and Coxes, among others, were called to settle the Sandpinch River area, now known as Manti. It was a 3-week journey to the Manti area, in Indian country, and far from help. Their call was prompted by Chief Walker. Impressed favorably by the request from the noted Indian Chief Walker for the settlers to teach the natives higher and better ways of life, President Brigham Young sent a group of pioneers into the Sandwich Valley to establish a new settlement. Later, in 1853, Walker led his followers against the settlers in the Walker War. Sandwich Valley. The settlers arrived in the Sandwich Valley on December 1, 1849, with almost nothing to eat, no food for their cattle, and no shelter to keep them warm. In freezing weather they dug holes in the side of the hill. It took days to dig out the natural indentations, because they were working with solid stone. The shelters they had made were located in the side of the hill, where the Manti Temple now stands. These dugouts and their wagon boxes which they stood on and with wagon covers stretched between were their only protection from the elements, in one of the harshest winters on record. Edwin's family shared a 16-foot square dugout with their chair shop in one end. With 3 wives, 9 children, and the chair shop, they were very crowded. The wood for their chairs was hauled in on hand sleds from the hills by the oldest boys and their father. Food had to be divided with the Indians to keep peace. President Young had promised them provisions and help, but none came. Edwin and Orville Cox put on snowshoes and with a little parched corn in their pockets for food, placed their bedding on a sleigh, and started to Salt Lake City for help. Along the way, they gave their hand-drawn sleigh to a stranded group, put their quilts on their backs, and walked on to Salt Lake City. President Young sent aid immediately. Throughout the winter, The Whitings gathered wood and made chairs in their shop. The chairs were taken to Salt Lake and traded for food in the spring. That spring, three baby girls were born to the Whitings. Harriet was born to Mary Cox in April, Louisa was born to Elizabeth in May, and Cornelia was born to Almira in June. Rattlesnakes. But good weather brought new, unexpected problems. From the cracks and crevices in the rocky hill that had protected them, from holes in the ground and from caves under slabs of stone crawled hundreds of rattlesnakes coming out of hibernation. The snakes were everywhere. On the south slope they lay in coils on the paths. They crawled under the wood piles, into the dwarfed underbrush and under wagon boxes. In the dugouts, the snakes hid in wood boxes, tool boxes, cupboards and beds. The first night the snakes appeared, 300 rattlesnakes were killed. Several more nights they killed hundreds of snakes. Amazingly, not one person was harmed. Civilization. The hill, with its caves and holes, was no longer an inviting refuge. The settlers moved away from the hill and ventured out into the valley. The Indians became hostile, so it was necessary to build a stone fort for protection. The settlers lived within the protecting fort walls, inside small log cabins. The Indians felt that the white men had stolen their ground, even though Chief Walker had asked for the settlers to come. The gates of the fort were kept locked, while the men went to the fields to work. Settlers carried their guns with them for safety. This was the beginning of the Walker War. Edwin was appointed captain of the militia. A major priority the second winter in the valley was education. A log house was built as a school, and Mary Cox Whiting was one of the two teachers. During the years the Whiting family lived in Manti, Edwin served on the city council and on the state high council. The family eventually built a two-story home on First West and a block south of the temple site, next door to the Cox family. The temple would not be completed until 1888, long after Edwin left Manti. The home was built facing west on one of the choice corner lots. It had three big living rooms, one for each wife, each with a beautiful fireplace and mantle and a beveled plate glass mirror. The upstairs floor housed two dormitory rooms, one for the girls and one for the boys. The home was built of rock and white stucco. Two of the living rooms were across the front, and one was in the back of the house. The front door opened into the two forward living rooms. The one-story kitchen was located at the south end of the big building. There was a window in each room. The porch in front of the door extended out about 10 feet, and was sheltered by a balcony. A picket fence marked the west and north boundaries. Another prominent feature was Edwin's barn. It was large, about 25 by 40, and was 3 stories high. There was also a large granary and 2 other outbuildings. Faith-promoting experiences. Edwin served another mission, in Ohio, from the fall of 1854 to the summer of 1856. During this time, his family battled grasshopper invasions. The grasshoppers ate most of the crops and the family survived on sago lilies, pigweed, and other wild greens, which the Indians had taught them to eat. Pigweed is known to contain protein and carbohydrates. This was a miracle, as pigweed had not grown in that location before. Edwin stopped in Salt Lake City on his way home from his mission. On October 8, 1856, he was married to his 4th wife, Hannah Haynes Brown. She had been in the same wagon company as Edwin, as he returned from his mission. In 1857 Edwin became the mayor of Manti, serving 2 terms. Eventually he served as a member of the territorial legislature. On 14 April, 1857, he married Marion Washburn, his 5th wife. They were sealed in the Endowment House in Salt Lake City. After Edwin finished his 2nd term, he got permission from Brigham Young to move his family to Springville, a better climate for growing the fruit trees he had struggled to cultivate in Manti. Edwin bought a strip of land on 400 South and Main. It continued east where the Springville Art Museum now stands. It extended on east of 200 East. He built two adobe homes exactly alike at 450 South Main Street, leaving a space of 50 feet between. He later filled in the space with the third structure, which connected the other two houses. The remodeled home came to be known as the Big House. It was a two-story structure with spacious windows and doors, and large rooms. Choice fruits and berries grew in orchards. The front yard was a garden of flowers and berries. The wives all moved to Springville when the Big House was ready. Homes were eventually built for each of the wives. Hannah's was in Mapleton and Mary's was in Hobble Creek Canyon. After a few years, Almira divorced Edwin, remarried, had another child, and moved to San Bernardino, California. Even though many of his children settled elsewhere, Springville and Mapleton became Edwin's final home. He died December 8, 1890. He had 20 sons and 16 daughters. 25 of those children were living at the time of his death, along with 135 grandchildren and 29 great-grandchildren.